Good afternoon. Happy Sabbath. So toward the end of the weekly Sabbath on May the 19th, the Sabbath before Pentecost, over in Oklahoma City, the congregation had a Pentecost weekend Bible game in Edmond. After services, there before Pentecost started. Don and I attended here in Tulsa on that Sabbath and didn't go over to Edmond, but we did study the book of Daniel. And I read it through one time, and then I started through again. When I searched Daniel on the United website, it showed 11,900 references. So there is no shortage, even on our church website, for Daniel. Now, Daniel and Jeremiah and Ezekiel all lived at the same time. Daniel was taken captive to Babylon. Jeremiah was back in Jerusalem, and Ezekiel was with the captives by the river Kibar. And so I'd like to, first of all, here summarize just some, not all, but just some of the history prophesied in Daniel. In Nebuchadnezzar's first dream, in Daniel 2, God revealed four successive world-ruling empires, beginning with Babylon, and it extended all the way to the kingdom of God. And that covered about 2,600 years, and the kingdom of God hadn't come yet, so we don't know exactly what that number is. And the prophecies of these four world-ruling empires are repeated in Daniel 7, extending to the establishment of the kingdom of God on earth also. And then there's a 70 weeks prophecy in Daniel 9. And from this 70 weeks prophecy, we can deduce the year of Christ's birth and the beginning of his ministry. And there are detailed prophecies in Daniel 10 to 12. That cover about 350 years of history in the Middle East, which then later on transitions to the end time, the tribulation, and the resurrection of the wise, and covers over 2,500 years. And there are more prophecies that I have not mentioned. So when we combine the prophecies that are given in Daniel with what Jesus prophesied in Matthew 24 and Mark 13, I believe it is, or 16, and in the book of Revelation, with God's inspiration, we can get a lot better understanding of what's going to happen here in the end time events. Modern scholars, would you believe that Daniel is a fictional character, fictitious. How could Daniel write all of these detailed prophecies that cover thousands of years in advance? Here is what Wikipedia states in the article Daniel. And in parentheses, they've got biblical figure. And let me quote what Wikipedia says. He says, the consensus of modern scholars is that Daniel never existed. Daniel never existed, and the book is a cryptic allusion to the reign of the second century B.C. Greek king Antiochus IV, Epiphanes. Daniel lived about 600 B.C., but Antiochus IV, Epiphanes, lived about in reign from 175 B.C. to 164 B.C. Antiochus Epiphanes was a Hellenistic Greek king of the Seleucid Empire. And he reigned from 175 to 164 B.C. Antiochus was a very cruel, arrogant king who sacrificed an offering to the Greek god Zeus in the temple of God in Jerusalem. And he did that on December the 16th, 168 B.C. And Daniel calls it an abomination of desolation. And that's in Daniel 11:31. And this abomination of desolation, when Antiochus Epiphanes sacrificed a pig in the temple, is a forerunner of what Christ said was going to happen in the end time. Christ spoke of this in Matthew 24:15 and Mark 13:14, that occurs at the end of time, end days. Regarding Daniel being a fictitious character, what did the Lord, the YHWH of the Old Testament, say about Daniel? Revealed through the prophet Ezekiel about Daniel. Now, what you'll need to do is put you a marker in Daniel, and so you can hold your place there. And go back to Ezekiel 14. Ezekiel 14, beginning in verse 12. Ezekiel 14, verse 12. The word of the Lord, YHWH, came again to me, to Ezekiel, saying, Son of man, when a land sins against me by persistent unfaithfulness, as the Jews were certainly doing, I will stretch out my hand against it. I will cut off its supply of bread, send famine on it, and cut off man and beast from it. Though these three men, verse 14, Noah, Daniel, and Job, you see, the Lord didn't believe that Daniel was a fictitious character. He placed him in the same league with Noah and Job as being three righteous men. If they were in it, they would deliver only themselves by their righteousness, says the Lord God. And then he goes on to say, if he sent wild beasts, if he bring a sword, verse 17, or if he sends pestilence, in each one of those cases he said nobody else would survive. Only these three men would survive, and not even their sons or daughters would survive the calamity. Only Noah, Daniel, and Job would survive. So what did Jesus Christ say about Daniel being a fictitious character that didn't exist? Let's turn to Matthew 24 and hold your place back there in Daniel, because we're going to go back there shortly. Matthew 24, verse 15. Jesus Christ said on the Mount of Olives, privately, to Peter, John, James, and Andrew, per Mark 13:3. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, not only did he exist, but Jesus names him, identifies him as a prophet. Standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. And then he goes on with a bunch of signs about what we're supposed to do. Jesus also repeated this same statement about the abomination of desolation in Mark 13:14, and he adds the statement there, standing where it ought not. Standing where it ought not, and we read that it's standing in the holy place here in Matthew 24, verse 15. So today, in the time remaining, I'm going to speak about several events in the life of Daniel that illustrate what a splendid example of faithfulness and obedience that he showed. And he was and he is for all of us to follow. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego will also be mentioned because they were also faithful and obedient just as Daniel was. And the title that I've given this is Strive to Be a Daniel. Strive to be a Daniel. So, turn back to Daniel now, beginning in verse 1 of Daniel 1. Because the Jews had been unfaithful, guilty of Sabbath breaking and idolatry, God began to send them into captivity, and he'd done so with Israel over 100 years earlier. They had gone into captivity. So Daniel 1:1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And so God was behind this, and he gave Jehoiakim into Nebuchadnezzar's hand. And Nebuchadnezzar also took, you can read in verse 2, some of the articles from the temple and carried it back to his home country, into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And then King Nebuchadnezzar, verse 3, instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. And what the Babylonians and Nebuchadnezzar did when they captured a people, they picked out the best and the brightest and brought them in to serve in their government, which would have increased and improved their government. And the king appointed for them a daily provision, verse 5, of the king's delicacies and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them. Some of the references say it was parts of 3 years, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. So the king instructed Ashpenaz to pick out young men from the nobility, who were handsome, who were wise, who were gifted, who were smart. Young men who could be trained to serve in the king's palace. These weren't young men who were covered with tattoos, with body piercings, with hair down to their shoulders, taking a pot break or some drug break. Not at all. They were young and bright and wise and gifted and set out to serve the king Nebuchadnezzar. Down to verse 6. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. To them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. And these three men are mostly referred throughout the book of Daniel as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel, although his Babylonian name was Belteshazzar, is normally called Daniel throughout the book. Now these were young captives. According to Mr. Roy Holiday, in one of his sermons in the 11,900 references, he said these were teenagers or young adults. There was a Bible study that I listened to by Mr. John Miller, I believe. Both these are elders in United. He said that Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach were between 13 and 15 years old. They were teenagers. And he said they were born during the reign of Josiah, when he did all of the reforms and straightened Judah out, put away all of the idolatry and all the commandment breaking that the Jews we're doing. But these were captives. And here they are. If they're teenagers, they're getting carted off to a foreign land. They don't know what's going to happen to them. They're in the hand of a despot, a cruel, arrogant king. And it must have been totally unsettling to them to be taken off from their family and their peoples. Verse 8, Daniel 1. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Probably the king's delicacies included unclean food that had been maybe sacrificed to idols. Could have been both. Unclean and sacrificed to idols. And he did not want to defile himself. He purposed in his heart. He purposed in his heart. Daniel began to be faithful to God at a young age. And he continued to be faithful throughout his life. Daniel prayed. Daniel fasted. Daniel was humble. Daniel never compromised. Daniel remained committed, convicted, and courageous. Daniel never was uncommitted or wishy-washy or mealy-mouthed. Most important of all, Daniel was greatly beloved by God. Daniel purposed in his heart to obey God, and he did so for all of his life. If you read all the way through the book of Daniel, you won't find one negative comment about Daniel. I always thought that Joseph was one of the most uprighteous men you could find in the Bible. Here he is all the way off in another country as a slave, and Potiphar's wife goes after him, and he runs the other way. Well, Daniel and Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego were kind of under the same kind of circumstance. Here they are off in another country, separated from family and friends, and they could have said, well, what's the big deal? Why not just eat a little shrimp? Why not just drink a little wine that's been sacrificed to Nebuchadnezzar's God? But they didn't. He purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's delicacies nor with the wine which he drank. And so he didn't keep his mouth shut. He spoke up. Therefore, he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. The latter part of verse 8, Daniel 1. So God was working in all of this, working out a purpose and a plan. And you notice that in verse 9, that now God had brought Daniel into the favor and goodwill of the chief of the eunuchs. And you notice that Daniel was included in a group of eunuchs. And the thought is in the reference books that you look at that Daniel was probably a eunuch, and so therefore Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would have also been eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs had a problem with Daniel's request. Remember, Nebuchadnezzar was a despot. Years later, to Belshazzar, Daniel told Belshazzar that your father Nebuchadnezzar kept alive whoever he wanted to, and he executed anybody that he wanted to. He was a despot. He was arrogant. He was full of pride. And so the chief of the eunuchs said, I'm afraid to do this. If I don't give you the same provisions that everybody else is eating and you don't look as good in your face, be off with my head. And so Daniel used wisdom. He spoke up. He didn't go along. He proposed a test in verse 12. He said, please test your servants for 10 days and let them give us vegetables to eat and water to drink. Don't eat the king's delicacies. Don't drink his wine. Then let our countenance, verse 13, be examined before you, and the countenances of the young men who eat the portion of the king's delicacies, and as you see fit, so deal with your servants. So he consented with them in this matter and tested them 10 days. And so how did Daniel's test turn out? Well, verse 15. At the end of 10 days, their countenance appeared better and fatter in flesh than all the young men who ate the portion of the king's delicacies. And so everything turned out good, and so they had their vegetables and water then, from then on, during their training period. And so they did not defile themselves with the king's delicacies. And so God blessed these four young men in their training. He gave them favor with the chief of the eunuchs. And God, verse 17, gave them skill and ability and wisdom. And for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, when the king had said that they should be brought in after 3 years, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar, and so the king interviewed them. In verse 19, and among them all was found, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they served before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding about which the king examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in all his realm. And so Daniel then served through the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar. He was there during Belshazzar's reign. He was there with Darius the Mede and Cyrus the Persian. And according to my inspired margin from the Bible reading program, King Cyrus was 539 B.C. Now, in chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. And it really shakes him up. And his spirit was so troubled that his sleep left him in verse 1 of chapter 2. And so he calls all of his wise men to come. And he tells them that he wants them to tell him the dream that he had and then give him the interpretation. Well, they tell the king that, you're asking way more than anybody's ever asked. And they go back and forth, and they tell him that there's just nobody that can do that. I mean, over in verse 11, they say there's no other who can tell it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. And so King Nebuchadnezzar has been telling them, as you read down through there, that if they can't tell him the dream and what the interpretation is, it's off with their heads. They're all going to be killed. And so the decree goes out in verse 12 of Daniel 2. For this reason, the king was angry and very furious and gave a command to destroy all the wise men of Babylon. Go kill them all. See, this is a despot. He's cruel. He's got life and death in his hand. So the decree went out, and they began killing the wise men, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. And so Arioch, the chief captain of the king's guard, came to Daniel, and Daniel asked him what the hurry was, what's the rush, and why is the decree from the king so urgent? Verse 15. And then Arioch made the decision known to Daniel. Now it's either speak up or die. So Daniel went in and asked the king, verse 16, to give him time that he might tell the king the interpretation. So he goes home. He tells his companions, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, what's going on. They pray to God to give them understanding. And that night in a vision, God gives Daniel the dream and the interpretation. And so it says in verse 18 that they might seek mercies from the God of heaven concerning this secret, so that Daniel and his companions might not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So then Daniel praises and blesses God, and he goes to Arioch, the captain of the guard. In verse 24 of Daniel 2:24. And so he tells Arioch, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Take me before the king, and I will tell the king the interpretation. So Arioch takes him before the king, and the king asks him in verse 26, are you able to make known to me the dream which I have seen and its interpretation? And so now it's Daniel's turn. So Daniel answers verse 27 in the presence of the king and says the secret that the king has demanded, all of your wise men can't answer, cannot declare. Verse 28, but there is a God in heaven who reveals secret, and he has made known to Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. The latter days in which we are living right now. The latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head upon your bed were these. And he, verse 29, who reveals secret has made known to you what will be. Daniel doesn't take any credit. That's one thing you see about him all through Daniel. He's humble. He gives God the credit. And he does right here. In verse 30 he said, but as for me, this secret has not been revealed to me because I have more wisdom than anyone living. But for our sakes who make known the interpretation to the king, and that you may know the thoughts of your heart. And so Daniel tells him that he saw a great image that had a head of gold. It had arms and a chest of silver. It had stomach and hips of bronze. And it had legs and feet of iron. And the feet were a mixture of iron and clay that wouldn't blend together. And so God revealed to Nebuchadnezzar through Daniel that Nebuchadnezzar was this head of gold. And he would be followed by the Medo-Persian Empire that was pictured by the silver, to be followed by the bronze, which was the Greco-Macedonian, Alexander the Great, to be followed by the Roman Empire. And he goes on to say that in the days of these kings, the kings pictured by the ten toes on the feet in verse 44. Now he's bringing it down to the time the kingdom of God is set up on this earth when Jesus Christ is sent back. And in the days of these kings, verse 44, Daniel 2, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever. it shall stand forever. And that's what you and I hope for. We hope for the sound of that seventh trumpet to sound and for us to rise in the air to meet Christ and to come back to the Mount of Olives. In Daniel 3, or before we go there, Daniel says in verse 245, toward the bottom, the great God has made known to the king what will come to pass after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation is sure. Now notice how Nebuchadnezzar reacted. Then verse 46, then King Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face, prostrate before Daniel, and commanded that they should present an offering and incense to him. The king answered Daniel and said, truly your God is the God of gods, the Lord of kings, and a revealer of secrets, since you could reveal this secret. Then the king promoted Daniel and gave him many great gifts, and he made him ruler over the whole province of Babylon and the chief administrator over all the wise men of Babylon. And also Daniel petitioned the king, and he set Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego over the affairs of the province of Babylon. But Daniel sat in the gate of the king, which was a special place of authority. So in chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar built a tall gold image that was about 90 feet tall altogether and about 9 feet wide. And then he sent out an invitation to all of the officials in his kingdom. He goes through a list of satraps, the administrators, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the judges and magistrates, all the officials of the provinces in verse 2, to come to the dedication of the image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And his despotic, arrogant, cruel nature shows itself here too. They had a big band there with several instruments playing music, and so a herald gets up and reads aloud that when you hear the music start to play, you need to fall down and worship this image. And verse 6, and whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. A burning fiery furnace. So the music starts and everybody falls down. With all of these officials, there must have been hundreds and hundreds of people, maybe thousands. And it was 3 people that are mentioned that didn't fall down: Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so here come the scribes, the Pharisees, and the Sadducees as they accuse Jesus. Well, here come the Chaldeans, verse 8, and to accuse the Jews. And they say, you made a decree, O king, and these Jews who you've appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon in verse 12, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these men have not paid due regard to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. And that made Nebuchadnezzar really mad, in rage and fury, verse 13. He gave command for them to be brought before him, and he said, look, I'm going to give you one more chance. When the music starts, if you'll fall down and worship the gold image, good. But if you don't, you're going to be cast into this burning fiery furnace in verse 15. And he says in the last part, And who is the God who will deliver you from my hand? See the arrogance and the pride and the cruelty? The rubber hit the road here for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. God willing, when it comes down to something like this in the end time, when we're called to test, we can be a Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, verse 16, answered and said, O king, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, verse 18, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. You talk about flipping his bit in a big way. He was full of fury, verse 19. An expression on his face changed toward Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And he commanded that they heat that furnace up 7 times hotter than it normally was. And then he had these men bound in verse 21 in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments. And they were cast in the midst of the burning fire furnace. And the fire was reaching out so much that it killed the strong men who threw them into the fire. And these 3 men, verse 23, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. But then something strange happened. He'd thrown 3 men in, but all of a sudden he sees 4 walking around, and they're not hurt. Then King Nebuchadnezzar, verse 24, was astonished, and he rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, did we not cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said to the king, true, O king. Look, he answered, I see 4 men loose walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the form of the 4th is like the Son of God. And so Nebuchadnezzar calls them to come out in verse 26. He calls them servants of the Most High God. Come out and come here, verse 26. And so they came from the midst of the fire. And this is a marvelous thing. All of the officials gathered around them, on whose bodies the fire had no power. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. Have you ever gotten up close to a campfire and burned a hair on your hand? It doesn't smell good at all, does it? It stinks. Well, here these men had been cast in this fiery furnace. It was probably used as a smelter, according to some of the references. And God prevented the fire from affecting them at all. They didn't even smell like they had been burned. They had no smell of the fire on them. So Nebuchadnezzar had a first-hand meeting with the God of heaven once again. And he says in verse 28, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him, and they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own God. And so he makes another decree. You know, it's cruel. He says, therefore I make a decree that any people, nation, or language which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this. And so instead of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being burned up, they get promoted. Verse 30, then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar had a second dream in Daniel 4. 1 through 37, and according to the write-up, he writes it. He dreamed there was he saw a tall tree that stretched up to heaven, and it was beautiful and produced a lot of food, and the birds could sit in it and nest in it, and it provided food for all. And then a watcher came down from heaven and struck the tree, and it all got swept away, and the stump was left with a band of iron and bronze around it, stump and the roots. And in Daniel 4, verse 17, the reason for all of this going on, this decision is by the decree of the watchers. Daniel 4, verse 17, and the sentence by the word of the Holy One, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he will and sets over it the lowest of men. And that statement is repeated several times in the book of Daniel, that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he will, and in this case, sets over it the lowest of men. And certainly we have had some of the lowest of men, even in our lifetimes. People like Stalin, Mao, Hitler, Mussolini. I mean, the list goes on and on. Sets over it the lowest of men. And so Daniel gave the interpretation. He says, this is the interpretation in verse 24. And this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my Lord the King. They shall drive you from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field, and they shall make you eat grass like oxen. They shall wet you with the dew of heaven, and seven times shall pass over you till you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomever he chooses. And inasmuch as they gave the command to leave the stump and roots of the tree, your kingdom shall be assured to you after you come to know that heaven rules. Therefore, O King, let my counsel be acceptable to you. Break off your sins by being righteous and your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor. Perhaps there may be a lengthening of your prosperity. And so Nebuchadnezzar was given a year to overcome his pride. And so all of this came up on King Nebuchadnezzar according to verse 28. He was walking about in the palace one day. And the king spoke, verse 30, saying, he's giving himself the credit. I mean, he's lifted way up in pride. Is not this great Babylon that I have built for a royal dwelling by my mighty power and for the honor of my majesty? And so while the words are coming out of his mouth, a voice fell from heaven, King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is spoken, the kingdom has departed from you. And Nebuchadnezzar was insane for 7 years. And he was out in the field with the animals, and he ate straw like the ox, and his nails grew long. They shall make you eat grass like oxen, and seven times shall pass over you until you know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he chooses. Verse 33, that very hour the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with the dew of heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird claw. And so 7 years later, God restores Nebuchadnezzar's sanity. And he says, "My understanding returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever." In verse 34. "For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are reputed as nothing. He does according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. No one can restrain his hand or say to him, 'What have you done?' At the same time, my reason returned to me, and for the glory of my kingdom, my honor and splendor returned to me. My counselors and nobles resorted to me. I was restored to my kingdom, and excellent majesty was added to me." Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and extol and honor the King of Heaven, all of whose works are truth and his ways justice, and those who walk in pride he is able to abase. In chapter 5, Belshazzar, who is the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, held a great feast for 1,000 of his lords and ended up in a drunken orgy. And in the midst of all of this, he called for the utensils that Nebuchadnezzar had taken from the temple, and they brought those out. So Belshazzar and all of his wives and concubines and lords, they drank wine and from these vessels from the temple and praised their pagan gods. Verse 5 of chapter 5. In the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster of the wall of the king's palace. So this hand appears and it writes, "Meeny, meeny, tekel, upharsin." And it scared Belshazzar. His bodily functions may have failed him. So that the verse 6, the joints of his hips were loosened and his knees knocked against each other. And so he called for all of the wise men. And he told them that if they could interpret, they'd be clothed with purple and have a chain of gold around his neck, and he shall be the third ruler in the kingdom. Verse 7. Be the third ruler in the kingdom. It turns out that Belshazzar was co-regent with his father. And so anybody that he appointed would not be the second ruler in the kingdom, as Joseph was, but he would be the third ruler in the kingdom because it was Belshazzar's father, then Belshazzar, then this third ruler. And so none of the king's wise men could interpret the handwriting on the wall. But then the queen came in and said, "There's this a man in your kingdom," verse 11, "in whom is the spirit of the holy God," verse 11. "And in the days of your father," or ancestor in the New King James margin, "light and understanding and wisdom like the wisdom of the gods were found in him. And King Nebuchadnezzar, your father," your grandfather, "your father the king, made him chief of the magicians, astrologers, Chaldeans, and soothsayers. Inasmuch as an excellent spirit, knowledge in interpreting dreams, solving riddles, and explaining enigmas were found in this Daniel, whom the king named Belteshazzar. Now let Daniel be called, and he will give the interpretation." So they send for Daniel. Daniel comes in. Belshazzar tells him that he'd reward him with all of these riches And he'd be the third ruler in the kingdom if he could interpret this handwriting on the wall. Verse 17 of Daniel 5. I see here Daniel is not being wishy-washy or mealy-mouthed or reticent in answering King Belshazzar. Let your gifts be for yourself and give your rewards to another, yet I will reveal the writing to the king. And then he takes Belshazzar to task. In verse 18 he says, O king, the Most High God gave Nebuchadnezzar your father a kingdom and majesty, glory, and honor. And because of the majesty that he gave him, all peoples, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whomever he wished, and I referred to this a time or two already, whomever Nebuchadnezzar wished, he executed, he put to death. Whomever he wished, he kept alive. Whomever he wished, he set up, and whoever he wished, he put down. He was an all-ruling despot. But when his heart was lifted up, when he had the dream of the big tree, and it was chopped down, and the stump was left with a band around it, stump and the roots, and his spirit was hardened in pride. That was his problem, was pride, which God hates. He was deposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. Then he was driven from the sons of men. His heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild donkeys. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven. And here he repeats that the most, till he knew that the Most High God rules in the kingdom of men and appoints over it whomever he chooses. But you, his son Belshazzar, have not humbled your heart, although you knew all of this. He knew about Nebuchadnezzar's dream with the tall statue. He knew about the tall tree. And you have lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you, and you and your lords, your wives, and your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you have praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know, and the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. So then the fingers of the hand were sent from him, and the writing was written, Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. This is the interpretation of each word. Mene, God has numbered your kingdom and finished it. Tekel, you have been weighed in the balances and found wanting. Perez, your kingdom has been divided and given to the Medes and the Persians. Then Belshazzar gave the command, and they clothed Daniel with purple and put a chain of gold around his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. And a few hours later, Darius the Mede got into received the kingdom being about 62 years old. Cyrus was involved with this according to the write-up that I read. The city of Babylon was a huge city. It was about 55 miles around it. And the Euphrates River flowed through the city. And what these soldiers did, what Cyrus did, is he drained the Euphrates. Babylon had a huge multi-layered walls around it, several walls. And the big one was wide enough on top for two chariots to drive side by side in this wall. And they didn't think that anybody could ever broach that city. Well, while Belshazzar and all of his lords or in a drunken debauchery, they drain that river to where the soldiers can wade in about hip deep. And they go in and take the city, and they kill Belshazzar that night. They kill Belshazzar that night. And so while Darius the Mede was king, Daniel had ascribed himself very well in the past. Had been a good governmental servant. So Darius, verse 1 of chapter 6, set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom, and he put 3 governors over them. And Daniel was one of these 3. But then Daniel, as he usually did, distinguished himself among the 3. And because, verse 3, an excellent spirit was in him, the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So he's going to put him in charge of everything under him. Well, that didn't sit very good with the other officials. And so, verse 4, they sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom. But they could find no charge of fault because he was faithful, nor was any error or fault found in him. He hadn't taken any bribes. He hadn't had any affairs with any of the other eunuchs. I mean, they couldn't find anything to accuse him of that was dishonest or unethical. And so they said in verse 5, we're not going to find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. And so they gather up to the king and tell the king that they want him to sign a decree that says that nobody is to make any petition to anyone else besides the king for 30 days. That whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. In verse 7. And so King Darius thought everything was hunky-dory, and he signs the decree. And then Daniel goes home, and you see he presents a very good example of praying. It mentions that he prayed 3 times a day, and as he usually prayed, and in his upper room, verse 10, with the windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. Now, I don't know if I would have done that, would you? I think I'd have left the window closed. I'd have gone into another room. But these Chaldeans, or Medes, whatever they are now, were out there listening. And so they caught him praying. And so they go tell the king. And the king knows he's been had. He knows they pulled a fast one on him. Verse 14. And the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself. And he tried somehow to get Daniel out of being thrown in the lion's den, and he couldn't. And so they come back and they say, you signed a decree, and it can't be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians. I don't understand why people could be so stupid as to pass a law that couldn't be rescinded. But that was their law, that it couldn't be rescinded. And so the king gives a command in verse 16, and they take Daniel and throw him in the lion's den. And the king tells him in verse 16, your God whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. So they throw Daniel in the lion's den. The king goes back to his palace, and he couldn't sleep. And they didn't bring any music before him, and he spent the night fasting. So he got up early in the next morning, and he hurries out to the den of lions, and he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel in verse 20. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lion?" And so Daniel answers. Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouth so that they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you." And so the king was exceedingly glad. In verse 23, they took him up out of the den, and no injury was found on him because he believed in his God. And then the king had all of the people that have accused Daniel, and they threw them into the den of lions, and the lions had them eaten up before they got to the bottom of the pit. Turn to Daniel 12, and we'll end up wrapping this up. I had two more examples that I wanted to go through, but I'll skip over them for the sake of time. In chapter 12, Daniel is informed that the words of his book would be sealed until the time of the end. And that at the end of the days, he would arise to his inheritance. Notice Daniel 12, verse 4. "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, as we see today, as we run all over the world in airplanes and trains. And knowledge shall increase," and it's increasing at a dramatic rate for the last several decades. Verse 8. "Although I heard," Daniel speaking, "I did not understand. Then I said, 'My Lord, what shall be the end of these things?' And he said, 'Go your way, Daniel,'" verse 9, "'for the words are closed up and sealed till the time of the end. Many shall be purified, made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand. But the wise shall understand.'" Down to verse 13. "But you," speaking to Daniel, "go your way till the end, for you shall rest, you shall die, and will arise to your inheritance at the end of the day." So Daniel is going to be there. Daniel was a mighty prophet of God. Daniel was faithful to God from a very young age to the end of his life, even in trying circumstances as an exile and a captive in a foreign country. Daniel remained faithful while serving in high government offices under the kings of Babylon, the Medes, and the Persians. The prophecies that God revealed through Daniel extend from the time of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, the head of gold in the image that King Nebuchadnezzar saw, extend from that time to the return of Jesus Christ to set up the kingdom of God on this earth. Daniel purposed in his heart to obey God and set us a great spiritual example to follow. Daniel prayed and fasted and was a man of prayer. Daniel was humble. Daniel never compromised. Daniel remained committed, convicted, and courageous. Daniel was never uncommitted or wishy-washy. Most important of all, Daniel was greatly beloved by God and promised an inheritance at the end of days. May God help us all to be faithful as Daniel was from now until the end of our lives. Let's all strive to be a Daniel.